I'm just going to introduce you here. Tonight's call is with Sergio, and Sergio Borges is an elite-level Ironman distance triathlete. He has dedicated the last 15 years to studying the science of triathlon training. During this time, he has competed in hundreds of races of all distances, including 20 Ironman races around the world with a PR of 9:38 and over 50 half Ironmans with a PR of 4:12, qualifying for the Hawaiian Ironman World Championships 7 times. Sergio is also a Level 3 USA Triathlon coach, a Level 2 USA Cycling coach, and head coach of the UCI Triathlon team. Coached the USA Elite Junior and U23 at the World Duathlon Championships in Switzerland in 2003 and the U23 Tri-National Team in 2004. He also is a lecturer often at coaching Level 1 and Level 2 clinics for coaches and writes for 3 sport magazines. And so with that, I'm going to welcome to the call Sergio. How's it going?
Very good, Carrier. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing very well. With that, I'm going to go into the first question. And I know your philosophy is different from the standard approach that many coaches out there take. So basically, why don't you give us an overview of kind of what you like to describe as the method and how you go about your coaching?
Our philosophy, as I said, is called the method. And it was created by Iron Guides head coach Mark Becker with the input of great coaches. That includes Brett Sutton, that have a great influence in his ideas on the past. So what do we do, mostly what we do differently than other training philosophies or coaches out there is that we pay a very close attention to the hormone balance, you know, making sure we balance, you know, the catabolic and anabolic effect of each workout. We also pay great attention to motor skills development, something that's often overlooked by most athletes and coaches. And we don't put that much emphasis on endurance training that we believe it's been greatly abused by most athletes that end up plateauing or getting pretty drained and tired. Another thing that we do differently is we try to keep a high level of consistency of our athletes, and by working one energy system when another is resting, we allow athletes to recover quicker. So actually, our training programs don't have any prescribed days off or recovery weeks, because first the athlete feels no need for days off, and whenever they do need, they can take it, and it's not the coach that's going to be telling them when to rest. And the second, the recovery week, it's something that's also created by the traditional periodization of training. Again, it's a recovery imposed by a coach, not by what the body of the athlete is responding to exercise. So our training, it's we call cyclic training, not periodization. So we repeat the cycles of the training. And in our age group athletes, the recovery weeks we use whenever the circumstances force athlete to trip or busy with work or problem with the family or kids. So we know we always have something going on. So we let those weeks be, you know, their recovery week, so they can keep a higher consistency in their training.
Excellent. All right. That's very interesting. So, I mean, your philosophy or your method that you have with Iron Guides has delivered some great results for athletes out there. So why specifically or what is it specifically about your method that you think delivers such good results?
I think, you know, it's kind of what we all looking for that what we can achieve with the methods our athletes basically they can train harder and recover quicker. I guess this is what we always want and been looking for, and some athletes out there end up going to the wrong ways to achieve that. But what we see is that can be achieved by really knowing how to order and structure the workouts in the week, so the athlete can recover from one workout and the other, and keep the consistency high and train harder each time. Also, what happens is it's with the higher consistency allow the athletes to race more often. So we actually end up having a multi-peaking type of training because the athlete doesn't need necessarily to peak for one or two races as the traditional periodization applies.
Mm-hmm.
Our athletes, they can peak, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 times in a year. So all that first initial idea that we learned back in the days that, you know, our body can only peak twice or once, you know, that was never contested before. And we came strongly with the different ideas. And it's being proved as we have athletes, you know, that can race easily in Kona, then Ironman Western Australia, and then Ironman Malaysia. So they never actually even take time off, just keep training and can race in high level in all the races if they want to. Not that we tell them that they don't need to take any type of break, but physically they feel that they're ready, they can keep going training, which kind of goes back to more the reality and the fun of the sport, because the fun is to be able to race as much as we can and to feel good in all the races. I guess at least that's how I got into the sport. I wanted to do as much race as I could, but I always want to do well in all races, not only do well in one race in a year.
Yeah, definitely. Racing is good fun, for sure. That's why we all do it. All right, so what do you think are the top three keys to a good Ironman race?
I think what we look into Ironman training and racing, and then we tell athletes to do, it's working what nobody actually does mostly. It's one, it's build relative strength, you know, sports-specific in gym. It's, again, you know, everyone likes to get out of the door, go for, you know, for a long, easy run, a long, easy bike ride, or go in the pool and swim, but nobody's actually focusing on developing strength. And as we know, the older we get, you know, the more we need as we lose muscle mass and strength. And maybe a few of the athletes out there that start the sport when they were younger, you know, they have high levels of testosterone at age, they had a lot of strength, but that, you know, we lose that very quickly after, you know, we were about 30 years old. So this needs to be always applied in the training. So it should be part of the training every week, not only seasonal, like most of athletes do. They like to spend time in a weight room or doing some specific strength training just for like 2 or 3 months out of the year. By the time they're in halfway into their season, you know, their strength is much lower than what they started with in a year. So we keep that all year round so the athletes have that component every week in their training program. So that's one thing. Another one that's also related to age, but not doing too much, it's sports-specific motor patterns. So that's happened very often. If you don't practice the skills of your sport, you tend to lose it very quickly.
Mm.
You know, a good example would be, you know, elite swimmer, even if elite swimmer is out of the pool for 2-3 weeks, when he gets back in the pool, you know, when you hear from those guys, like, well, I lost a few for the water. And that's something that we're talking about. Same as running. If you stay out of the track or doing speed work for 2-3 months doing the base training, when you get back to the track and try to run, you feel like you have no legs. So, like, you know, you lose all of your coordination and all your, you know, ability to fire the muscle properly and to execute the movement correctly. So that's another component that we also work all year round and every week in our training program. And the third is that don't rely solely on endurance training. That's, I think, another key advice for any Ironman athlete out there. What we see is that athletes do way too much endurance training and long distance training, you know, long rides over 5 hours or long runs. are very catabolic and then require a lot of recovery, and people don't realize how much that. So basically what happened, they just drained their system and bring their testosterone levels all the way down, and the recovery is so much slower. So that's why, you know, when we were talking before about balancing catabolic and anabolic effects of the training, every time we have to do any endurance training, we always kind of balance it with the type of workout that's going to help you to build, you know, bring your hormones back to the balanced level again. So this will be my third tip for Ironman athletes. Is you don't need to do too much to race fast in Ironman.
Okay.
Ironman race.
Yeah, one of the last things you were saying there is doing workouts to bring people's hormonal levels back up. Can you give examples of those?
Yeah. Let's use an example as a long training, as because I just talked about that's what Ironman athletes usually do. So a typical
also with that, one other thing to throw in there, some people might not be familiar with what catabolic means in terms of long distance training and having that effect on the body. If you could just explain that too, that would be awesome.
Yeah. So let's use an example for, you know, 90% of us, you know, age group athletes that, you know, have a job and family. So we usually use our weekends for our long distance training. So let's say you do your long ride on Saturday and you do your running off the bike and then usually do your long run on Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's probably what most of us do. And so those both the workouts are, you know, what we call, you know, catabolic, which, you know, promotes a big damage on your muscle. It's a catabolic effect of, you know, damaging your muscle. And what most of the people do to try to recover from that workout is do an easy workout on Monday. So usually they feel pretty drained, you know, your energy level is pretty low after doing a long training on the weekend. So the athlete usually wake up in the morning and the first thing they want to do is some like easy jog or an easy swim. And that's just make it worse in terms of a recovery and rebuilding their balance, hormonal balance. So what we do differently, you know, when we talk about anabolic, we want to put a workout that creates an anabolic effect on your muscle, on your system. So this anabolic effect could be either through a strength workout or to speed workout. Both has the anabolic effect. So say, for example, in our athletes, if they have that workout on the weekend, a long ride on Saturday and a long run on Sunday, so what we try to do, it would be either like add fast, short swim workout on Sunday after the long run, or if they, you know, don't have much time because they have to spend time with family or for any other reasons, what we do first thing in the Monday morning, we do a strength work on a bike. Let's say, for example, you're going to ride on a heavy resistance, you know, between 40 and 50 RPM for 1 minute on and 1 minute off, something that won't be taxing the aerobic system as much but would help just enough to create the anabolic effect. So basically, you know, if you see anabolic as a bodybuilder. So a bodybuilder goes to the gym, you know, want to lift a heavy weight. So what he's trying to do is create an anabolic effect, which is build muscle.
Mm-hmm.
So catabolic destroy muscles, and then anabolic would build muscle back. So that's what we're trying to do. But, of course, you know, endurance athletes, because of the type of exercise we do, we never going to be gaining muscle, because when I say that, and the first thing you have to think is they're going to get big, look like a bodybuilder because they're doing this type of workout.
Mm-hmm.
But this never happened because we always depleted glycogen or so much training we do. So this is never going to happen. But that's basically one of the many ways that we use kind of to balance some of the hormones. That would be one of the things that we do. And the other thing that we do would be, you know, the energy system. One energy system is working, another one's resting. So we never make a mistake of working two energy systems back to back or on the same day that we see other athletes doing that all the time. So let's say if we're working one day, an endurance workout and the swimming. We're going to use some type of workout to balance that endurance workout. That would be either speed work or strength work, either swim or bike. And the very next day, if you did a hard speed workout on a run, you know, we wouldn't be doing a lactate tolerance workout on a bike or on a run, for example, something that, you know, would be overload their muscles due to the speed work they did the day before. So it's like one of the few details that we take in consideration when designing a training plan for an athlete.
Very interesting. All right. So what do you think are the – you know, you've had a pretty long Ironman career yourself. So what do you think are the keys to having a long, lasting Ironman career?
You know, what's funny is that, you know, looking back and see, you know, the races I did, I guess I was actually lucky to be able to, you know, last so long and doing so many races. And I think if I knew more when I started my career – you know, probably would be able to do and be racing at a higher level than what I did in the past. Because at first, you know, I was like on that traditional training approach where, you know, doing tons of training, you know, 25, 30 hours a week of training, mostly endurance. And I think, you know, one of the reasons I, in 2005 I did my last race, I had already changed my training protocol, but I didn't know enough about the hormone balances to be able to get more advantage out of my training. So I got to that point where I started losing that desire, the fun, you know, of the training, just because it was just like, oh, you know, this is so draining every time, every weekend, we were out there 5-6 hour ride. And that was added to, you know, so many gadgets and so many equipments that, you know, we as a triathlete end up getting relying to, you know, GPS, heart rate monitors, power meter, and then actually I didn't realize that I was only being guided by numbers. I was actually not free anymore to train like when they start triathlon, you know, over 15 years ago, or like go out of the door and doing training, you know, having a better perception of effort because I didn't have anything else to tell me how my body was reacting to the moment of the exercise. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's a lot of things that involved, and I think athlete that wanted to have a long career need to pay attention to those things. And what's going to keep people going is just the recovery. It's funny how everyone always worry about muscle recovery, but nobody actually talk about hormone recovery, and that's just the number one. I mean, if your legs are sore from a workout, you can still wake up the next morning and go for a ride or for a run. You know, your legs are sore, but you can still go. But if you wake up in the morning and feel pretty drained, like really tired, you know, that's the characteristic of that, you know, catabolic effects that you have on your body. You know you're not going to do anything. You know, you're just going to stay in bed. And that's how, you know, your inconsistency in training starts. And then, you know, one thing just leads to the other.
Right.
But luckily, in my case, in 2000, you know, I started kind of contesting, you know, and reanalyzing all the traditional periodization, and I realized that it was way too based on too much volume, and that was killing me. So I started actually reducing my training volume. That helps, and that been helping all my athletes. And in 2003, I actually went full board, and I wrote a method called inverted periodization, where I was just promoting a totally inverted training periodization. So work on speed and strength first, and then add the volume at the end close to the Ironman or close to the long-distance races.
Mm-hmm.
And that it helped, which is very similar to what the method does. With the difference that the method pay greater attention to, you know, energy system, the one rest and one works, and hormone balance, and also developing the motor skills. That's one thing that I didn't do in the past as well. I mean, I did some of the development through some speed work, but not with the emphasis, and, you know, didn't realize how much you lose it. You know, it's one thing when you're 20 years old, but then it's different when you're 45.
Yeah.
You're doing that. So I think the longer career was just the wake up and change things around, and that's what would be one of my biggest advice to Ironman athletes out there is that if you, what you're doing is not working or you're being plateaued for a while, it's time to change. Something needs to be changed, otherwise you're just going to be doing the same thing over and over again. You know, a great example of that is a master swimming workout.
Mm.
You know, how many of you guys out there go to the master swim workout every morning, you're going to find that same person that's been swimming that lane for 10, 15 years. It hasn't gotten any faster.
Yeah.
It hasn't gotten any slower, including myself back in the days. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's something that's not working. You know, they've been doing something over and over, and they're still there on that same lane, the same interval. You can go away for 5 years, come back, you know that person's going to be there. And that could be, you know, one of your fellow athletes.
Yeah.
And that happens, you know, happened to me as well. But.
All right. Excellent. All right. So what do you believe are the key things that people, like, you know, Kona is seen as, you know, the pinnacle to a lot of people in their career. So what are the key things that you think have been key in getting you or got you to Kona, or saying that, you know, basically your training techniques were a little different back then from what they probably would be today if you were still going at a high level. Basically, what are your thoughts on what are the keys to qualifying for big races such as Kona?
Yeah, Kona, it's tricky now, and it's just getting worse because everyone's getting faster and it's getting really competitive. So I think one of the first things to do is pick the right race. That's, I guess, that would be the first good advice. And be realistic with your strength and weaknesses. You know, if you know you're a big guy, muscle, 190 pound, so you're not probably going to choose to do Ironman Lanzarote that's freaking hot and very hilly and windy. So you know that your chances of qualifying against the fast, skinny, small Europeans are pretty slim. So I think it would be, you know, the number one would be, you know, trying to find a race that's going to suit your needs and your strength. So that's the number one. Second is train wisely and don't start training too early for Ironman races, because what you wanted for every single Ironman race is they have to get to the starting line fresh.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that you repeat over and over again is it doesn't matter how fit you are 3 months before the race, but, you know, it only counts when you get there and step on the starting line. And I see that happening, especially here in San Diego, which is the, I would say, the mecca of the overtrained athlete. Thanks to the great weather we have here, but this also bites you in the back because everyone's out there training every single day and just logging, you know, hours and hours of training. So you got to be careful to don't start your Ironman training too early and work on your weaknesses, you know. It's so common, you know, the weak swimmers don't like to swim, so you never see them in the water. They allow themselves to stay away from the pool for 3-4 weeks, then that's over for your motor skills.
Yeah.
You're not a good swimmer to begin with, and then you're going to stay away from the pool for 4 weeks, you know. It's like one step forward, two steps back. And another mistake athletes do to take way too long of a break during off-season. And when I talk about break is that not only complete break, but a break where you're not going to be working on your skills. So you don't need to be training. I'm not talking about volume. You can still do something that could be fun and different than a triathlon training, but something that could, you know, develop your skills. If you're out there, let's say, body surfing, so you're working your, you know, speed, and, you know, every time you have to surge, catch a wave, you know, you're going to be working the speed, you're going to be working in motor skills and swimming without having to be in a pool all day.
Mm.
You know, if you're out there cross-country skiing, you know, you'll be able to do some cross-training that you can develop the strength and some of the skills that can be used for triathlon as well. So it's about knowing what to do. When I have athletes going away for vacation and ski trips, for example, you know, make sure that, you know, see if they can find a pool, and I'm not asking them to do a long workout, but just get in the pool and do 20, 25s, focusing, you know, on a technique, in resting 10 seconds for 25 just to focus on a technique. That's a ski-oriented workout. It's not a training. You know, they only swim 500 yards or so. You know, same if they're somewhere different that they didn't have access to run, because, you know, the most skilled sports that we have is the swimming first and then running second. You know, I'm not too worried about biking, because biking in triathlon, and I'll talk about cycling, but in triathlon in general, unless ITU race, is mostly related to strength. So there's not that much skill involved in the triathlon bike racing, the triathlon racing. So I would ask some of the athletes to do a treadmill workout and, you know, work on their high stretch rate on the running, for example. Again, doesn't need to be long. It's just like 10, 15 minutes we do the job. Mm-hmm. And so this, the basic things, you know, work on their skills and on their strength when they're off season, and just keep that balance. And again, you know, as long as you're creative, you can do that in all different ways. It doesn't need to be triathlon specifically. But athletes tend to either rest completely or just go out and do their coffee shop ride and just do a 20-minute jog, and that only going to make them slower.
Yeah.
I mean, their only mind focus, their mind on endurance training again, you know, and they forget, you know, the most important. You know, athletes need to realize that, you know, endurance training starts when you're born. You know, your heart starts beating, that's endurance training. So the older you get, the more endurance you have naturally, just because your heart's been beating for longer, you've been developing aerobic endurance. So, but there's a lot of components that you lose. It's skills and strength. So that's the one you need to be work. And even when you're doing your normal training, triathlon, everything involves endurance training. You don't need to be so focused on endurance all the time. Even if you go out there, like an example, you're going to do a specific motor skills swimming workout that you're going to be doing sets of 25s, for example. You do three easy, one fast. 25. So every time you're swimming the easy ones, you're still adding endurance to your training. You don't need to be out there swimming 2,000 yards continuously to develop endurance. That's kind of the mistake that's out there that people think. And also that you need to develop a separate endurance for each sport, but actually it's all combined to what you do swim, bike, and run that's going to develop the endurance overall. That's why you see athletes we see very often come from different sports, and they can do well in triathlon if they have a cycling or running or swimming background, but, you know, they haven't ever swam, running, or bike in their life. You know, they have only done their own sport, but they can still do well because they have such a great engine already developed.
Mm-hmm.
But triathletes usually don't believe that, and they wanted to, you know, the thing they have to do, the 100-mile rides every weekend, you know, the 20-mile runs, and that's what brings them down usually.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. All right, so this is kind of like the question before. Someone comes up to you and says, I want a PR at my Ironman. What are you going to do to help this happen?
Well, the first thing I would do is just to look at the athlete and find what his weaknesses or strengths. That's one thing coaches out there don't pay much attention, is really analyzing the athletes and see their body type, you know, see their history, see their training, what they've done. Second would be, you got to be realistic in your goals. You'll see someone come to me and say, oh, well, I want to qualify for Kona, and now my best Ironman so far is a 14 hours. You know, we need to have realistic goals and see. Maybe, you know, we're talking about qualifying for Kona maybe in 3-4 years or even longer, but if you have to follow, you know, some strict guidelines of training that could involve diet and a change of body type, developing skills that you're missing and stuff like that. That's one thing. Number two is we have to have great focus on recovery. I think that's what I see. Again, I want to talk about most of the athletes that we see is that they get to the races tired because they always have unrealistic training plans that never applies to their life. You know, someone that comes to me that worked 40 hours a week, has a family, married, two kids, you know, I can't, you know, have someone like that train 20 hours a week or 22 hours a week. I have to adequate the training to what they can do.
Hmm.
And you got way more out of a balanced training than the volume. You know, if you have more volume and you can't recover from, you know, you're not going to get any gain out of the training. So basically, you can only train as much as you can recover. And that's very hard for athletes to understand. So that'll be kind of the second thing I would do with the athletes to make sure that it's the training I'm giving to them is realistic to the reality of life. So third would be, okay, let's develop what you're missing. You know, let's work in, you know, the skills you're missing. Let's work in the strength that you don't have or you lost during the years. And after that, we're going to, you know, only after that we're going to worry about, you know, building a endurance for a specific Ironman race that he'll be doing. So this is a very important to mention again that we need an athlete that is healthy, he can recover, and is happy with the training too. Frustration also could be very negative, and stress also could be very negative, and it all needs to be taking consideration, you know, with the training. That's why we're so, you know, on, you know, balance the training, the hormones, and especially, you know, different tips to diet, that we have kind of different approach, you know, we'll talk about taper and, you know, carb loading, all that, that we actually don't believe in any of this type of nutrition facts or methods that people have been using it out there. Basically what we want is to athlete to be consistent and, you know, having the fun back of the workout. If they're recovering better and feeling stronger, they'll start, you know, getting the fun of the training back. If they, every day they feel miserable, they wake up in the morning at 5 o'clock to train because they have that 1 hour before work, but they feel like they want to stay in bed every day, and they just force themselves to go out there. You know that after a year or two, you know, they're not going to continue doing that kind of work because it's, no one can take that for too long. If you always feel super tired and, you know, your life, it's miserable and you lose all that balance with life. And then, you know, added to family obligations and stuff like that. So that's a very important. So that would be my basically just resuming what I said. Basically, one, you know, get to know what type of athletes and what the athlete can do.
Mm-hmm.
Second is make sure it's balanced with the life. You can only train them as much as you can rest. And third is that you got to work on the weaknesses. And that probably for 99% of the people involved, strength and skills that need to be developed and need to be continued development. So that'll be kind of the three key concepts that we telling the athletes that we wanted to qualify.
All right. Very interesting. Good stuff. This is kind of going off some of the same stuff, but I guess why don't you just give us the top three mistakes you see Ironman athletes making?
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, I guess back when we said, you know, the single-minded focus on aerobic conditioning to the conclusion of very important attributes. I think that's the number one. Second, I'd say it's inappropriate training volume. You know, so what happened, and people start adding the volume to training, they see the rapid results of improvement, but then, you know, they kind of get plateau and then, you know, end up slowing down. And I think the third one mistake is obsession with the data. and the loss of intuitive feel for their own body. So that's a very important, because now everyone is so obsessed with the data and they don't know what their body is trying to tell them when they work out. So, for example, funny because I wrote an article for a website recently, talk about limiter C performance. When I was asking the athletes, like, how many times do you look at the heart rate monitor when you go out on the run? Let's say in a 45-minute run, how many times do you look on your watch? I don't know, 300, 400 times? And how many times you focus on your form when you're out on the run? One or two, maybe three? And also, how much do you think that number interferes in your training that day? That's another thing. You're running out there, you have your heart rate monitor on, you look at your watch. You've been looking at the watch every 30 seconds in a minute. You know, you're not focusing on the form at one point. You're not focusing on how efficient the stride rate is when you're running. And then if the number you're looking at is not what you're expecting, your subconscious is going to start working against you and send this, you know, signals back to your body, telling your body how to feel according to what they're reading. So basically, you'd be guided by the numbers, not more how your body feels. And that, you know, I see happen to myself before with either power meter or heart rate monitor or whatever that's out there that, you know, I've used it like everybody else I've used in the past. And that's what happened, is that my training changed depending on the number, but I never actually changed the training just based on how my body was reacting to the training. And what I'm seeing that you, the more you do that, the more you lose the feeling of your body. You don't know how your body is reacting anymore. All you know is that it's a zone one, zone two, the 120, 130 beats per minute. But you don't know if you're fatigued. You don't know how your legs are feeling. You don't know how your breathing are going in that moment or how efficient you are. And that's, I think, people lack now the most, is they don't know how to read the signs of their body. So they don't know how to train by perception anymore. Everyone is trained by numbers. And it's funny because I have an athlete that would come on the group long run and forget his Garmin or whatever thing he was using, and he went back home. He didn't run. It got to the point that the athlete didn't even run. And that's when I started paying attention to those details. Like, I think that's way too controlling. Or, you know, how many people you know that they come home and they want to download all their data on the computer. They spend like an hour trying to analyze the data that actually not going to tell them much. Or, you know, if it's a good, they keep it. If it's not what they're expecting, they just delete it. But basically, they're wasting an extra hour a day, and most of us don't have that time to waste, that they could be out there training or sleeping or enjoying their family or something else, but they're in front of the computer trying to analyze why their heart rate was 120 or power was 200 watts on that hill instead of 180 that they were expecting based on their leg day test they did a month before. And, you know, the thing is, we're never going to find the answer. Because as a coach, what we do is we always trying to find an answer that we don't have when athletes come to us. Like, well, I don't know why I was running and my heart rate was so low. My heart rate was so high. You know, it could be so many reasons why your body's reacting. You don't know the athlete enough to know what's going on to be able to analyze every single detail. You don't know if he had a fight with his wife the night before, if he lost his job, or if he drink, you know, a little too much the night before. There's so many variables that could change the way the body reacts that could be shown different ways through those gadgets. And we always trying to find, you know, an explanation that we actually don't have it. It would be so much easier that, you know, athletes come back to you instead of like, oh, how was your, you know, they download the data on the computer saying that I did a 5-mile run, my heart rate was 130 to 140, my speed was 9 minute mile or 8 minute mile. It would be so much better than you rarely see athlete giving to you is, I had this run, was I felt great, my body was very light, my recovery was quick, and it was a very effortless run. you know, that feedback, it's way more important than you see 120, 130 heart rate or, you know, that speed specific for that day, because really it doesn't matter, because you never know, you know, what the level of fatigue that it was in a day or not. And, you know, most important to see, you know, level of, we actually even adding that to our training, is that the level of enjoyment the athlete has on a day, because actually it's way more important than knowing, you know, what their heart rate is. Like, how much fun did you have in a workout today? That's a great example of how the body's reacting, how the athlete's reacting to the training. Like, well, if you feel the athlete is pretty bumped out or very fatigued, you know they're not going to say that they're having much fun training. And that's, you know, one of the signs that as a coach you can use to determine, you know, changes that their training or knowing what's going on with their athletes.
All right. Good deal. And then the last question we got right here is, how do you judge pacing for an Ironman?
That is a great question. And then goes a little bit back to what we were talking about. You know, a lot of people out there, they're all guided by their heart rates and power meters and GPS and stuff like that. And you know, as an athlete and I know, that how many times whatever you have planned didn't work, or whatever you see in a number, it doesn't work. I have, you know, one of the things that happened to me, I was doing the Ironman Canada 1 year, and I got out of the water, my heart rate was really high, so I got on the bike, it's like, whoa, my heart rate's really high, I was feeling great, my legs were fine, my breathing was perfect,
yeah.
My heart rate was high, I didn't know what it was. So riding, and people going by me, if you see some friends, they say, are you okay? He's like, yeah, I feel fine, but, you know, my heart rate's like 15 beats higher than what I'm expecting to be. So after 2 hours riding, I just said, like, oh, screw it. I'm just going to, you know, continue my race, because otherwise I'm just going to be here forever.
Yeah.
So funny is I start riding faster, and my heart rate started dropping, and I have no idea what happened. But, you know, at that moment I realized that I can't rely on those numbers anymore, because that's not telling how my body's feeling. So going back to the RMA pacing, one thing the athletes need to understand, they need to know what pace feels like more than anything else. Even especially when you taper, you know, your heart rate and the number is going to be totally different. And you need to know what you can do by reading the signs of your body. So, again, you need to be able to be out there training and promote efforts similar to what you're going to be racing and see what that feels like, and then you know what to do in the race day. But one of the mistakes athletes do is that they feel so fit, you know, during the race day, and, you know, added to the long, one of the mistakes of being doing a long taper, they start out way too fast. The unskilled swimmers usually swim too fast and then, you know, leave a lot of energy out in the swim and then don't realize that there's a huge carryover, that you end up feeling that, you know, extra fatigue to swim, you end up feeling only, like, let's say, in the second half of the run. Or on the bike, you know, going Kona, everyone's excited, going up Palani, you know, people cheering, everyone's flying by, and, you know, they leave all their energy out there right in the beginning. And we'll talk about not only energy, but, you know, how much more glycogen you're using at that point where, you know, you're going hard or whatever other people like say above your lactate tolerance or threshold or whatever name you want to call it, but you getting at that point where you close to hyperventilation on a race and you don't realize that, hey, I still have another 100 miles to go. And same thing happens on the run. So, and I see a lot of the mistakes happen to people that are way glued on their heart rate monitors. You see all the greatest racers and athletes out there, you know, including coaches like Dave Scott, you know, all those guys that promote heart rate training, those guys never race with any data. Those guys never even have bike computer in their bikes or heart rate monitors. Those guys race purely on fuel. So they make me go back with someone like, you tell people to use something that you don't personally. So you assuming the athlete has the ability to read the size of their body like you, but they don't because they're so glued in their numbers. So I guess for most of the Ironman athletes out there, you need to learn how to read the signs of the body and to know what your body is telling you to. And there's many ways to do that, but, you know, you need to get to the point where, you know, if you go out in the easy run, you know what easy is. And, you know, the more you do that, the more you learn about the body, you can put a heart rate monitor, you know, I bet to you that you'll be maybe 2-3 beats off whatever the number is just because you start having that feeling of, oh, how can you run easy? And I remember, I think Chrissy Wellington said that many times, and she's like, well, you know, I know what easy is, I know what moderate is, and I know what hard is, and that's all I need to know. You know, when Red Sutton tells me to go hard, I go hard, and I know what hard feels. So when I go to the race, you know, someone like her, you know exactly how to pace herself because you know exactly what it is by, you know, feeling the body, not much numbers. And make it much easier for the athlete to do that, too, as well. I mean, you have, you know, before we used to deal with 5-6 different training zones, and there's, and we never know what they are or what we are. I mean, we don't even know what kind of training zone. It's getting, we got too complicated. The athletes can't even do that or, again, you know, start, you know, losing the fun of the sport because all they do is follow us in some prescribed plan that was designed to tell them how their body are feeling instead of doing the other way around. When we design our training programs and we have our progression, it's funny, I had this question this other day. One of my athletes said, hey, when do I get the next progression of my training? I was like, I don't know, you tell me. Because the way we work is that based on the progression of the athlete, we decide if you're going to do any changes in the training or not. But the athlete could be doing repeating the same week of training, exactly the same workouts for 8-9 weeks if they're improving and getting stronger. I have my fiance has been repeating the same training that I gave to her for 12 weeks right now. And I ask her, like, how are you feeling? You think, you know, you have reached a plateau or, you know, we need to do any changes. She's like, well, no, I just feel faster and stronger every week. And so I'm like, well, if it's working, I'm not going to change it. So that's kind of what I need to have in mind out there, that not always you need to change it. I guess we don't need to change the training every week just to make it effective. You know, effective, it's whatever make you better. You know, we have cases and cases of athletes that wanted to improve their swim. That's the story of one of these professional athletes. It was coached by Bretson back in the days, and he was a pretty average swimmer. He wants to be an ITU athlete, but his swim of 1,500 meters was only 25 minutes. So for six months, he only swam 25 yards twice a day, nothing longer than that. He was only working his skills. You know, by the end of 6 months, he dropped his swim time from 25 to 18 minutes. And the only thing he did, he never worried about, you know, endurance training. He never worried about anything else but developing motor skills.
Wow.
And it's kind of go back to, it's funny because we see triathlon a totally different sport, but relates to so many other sports as well. I think the way we see skills, it's like martial arts. You know, if you go do karate, kung fu, whatever, you go there, you repeat the same punch 1,000 times, right? You know, your master is going to tell you, I got to do this punch here and repeat that 1,000 times until you master that skill. And one thing, too, that we do in martial arts that should be applied same in the triathlon, you're not going to learn the second punch or kick until you master the first one. And kind of should be the same way. I tell my athletes, like, oh, I wanted to do a 4,000 yards. I have that today. One of my athletes asked me, I wanted to do a 4,000 yards straight continues just to make sure I can swim the distance for Ironman. Like, well, you know, until you get there, you know, you need to be able to develop the proper motor skills. You know, otherwise you're going to swim 50 yards and 100, and then after that, everything is going to be horrendous because the strokes are going to fall apart. So the quality of the training is going to be so low, it's not even worth it. And you, do you have an idea how much that 4,000 yards is going to take out of you today compared to 6 months down the line if you work in your skills?
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about. Don't try to jump the gun until you learn the proper skills. So sometimes, you know, we'll see athletes, we ask them to repeat that same workout for 12 weeks until they mastered that workout. So they know they're very efficient, very economic. They're moving the way we want to, and then they go to the next level. And that's how we do, and we work at our athletes. And that applies to Ironman distance athletes as well. You know, you're not going to add volume until you have mastered the skills and increase your relative strength. That's what you need before anything else. You know, most of humans are endurance freaks anyway. You can't go out there and, you know, finish a marathon tomorrow, even if you had to walk a little bit, but you know you could finish with, you know, running once a week. It's humanly possible to do that.
Yeah.
But what's going to make you slower is just like a lack of skill and strength, the muscle endurance that you feel. So.
All right. Excellent. People can find you at Iron Guides, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you can find all the information about our training. We also have what we call an e-book that we call Triathlon Secrets that tells a lot about the way we think of training and why we're different. We have very interesting articles at our website as well, from the new aspects of nutrition, the different taper, the talk about the difference between the periodization and the cycle training that we do, and many other very interesting articles. If you guys are looking to read something different, interesting, go to our website, or we have a lot of stuff written out there on Extra and some on Triathlete magazine and many other Australian Triathlete as well and many other magazines out there. But the more and more you'll be able to find, if you're looking to read something different, controversial, that's been working, just check out our stuff online and you find something good to read. Especially if you're bored of reading the same thing over and over again.
All right. We got a few questions out there from some of the people listening on the webcast. You want to try to answer a few?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Tom asked the first question here. He says, do you recommend getting rid of the Garmins and the power meters and just train and race from feeling then?
Yes. That's a number one. Yes. Bring the fun back to the sport. You know, get out there and just having fun. Of course, you need to know, in testes too, you need to know what to do, but it doesn't need to be precisely what's out there. So it's amazing that we're offering a way of training that's going against most of the coaches, with the encourages people to spend money, tons of money, and all this equipment, but we actually wanted you to spend, instead of money, time understanding your body more than anything else. So, yes, we do. We're not against the equipment. I think it can be used as a great tool to, you know, after a workout, you can analyze some of their performance, but that should never guide your training.
All right. Excellent. Okay, next we got Jennifer Meyer from St. Louis, and she's asking, what kind of testing do you do to check hormone levels to monitor training?
Yeah, we actually, that's just something that it's not possible to be doing. You know, there's some blood tests we can do out there, but that we don't actually really care about that. You know, it's not about how much you gaining or losing in terms of a hormone or how much that's varying. What we want is to help you to balance that through nutrition and training. We know certain types of training promote certain types of hormone effects on your body. It'll be same as in nutrition. You know, if you eat a lot of sugar, you know, that's going to make your body, your pancreas, to produce more insulin. So that's, you know, high insulin will increase the cortisol, and there's some many other effects that could happen in the body. So what we were focusing much is that we know the facts of the hormones in the body, and we try to kind of balance that effect. You know, how much really doesn't matter, but we know that happened. We know if you go out there and run an hour and a half, you know how much you'd store your muscle, the catabolic effect of storing the muscle. So what we want to, it's kind of balance that effect. But there is some research out there that actually have tested that, and let's see, I actually have that here. I can give it back. Ooh. I have that. Go ahead.
We'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I was looking for why you asked this. I don't want people to be waiting. But
yeah, that's fine, man. You're good. All right. Let's see. Pam from Pretoria, South Africa asks, we're starting a new swimming program training triathletes and open water swimmers. With Ironman South Africa 2.5 months away, what is the best advice we can give first-timers, and should we work on changing technique now or wait till after Ironman 2009 and get technique right for 2010? Thanks.
Okay, great question. Well, it's fairly close, so that's a great question because everyone make the mistake of focusing way too much on the technique when, you know, they only, let's say, swimming two or three times a week for about 2,000. So by the time they get to the race, they might be improved their technique, but they don't even have the strength and endurance enough for the distance, so they're not going to be doing any good for them. So I would say if you have a 2.5 months to the race, one thing I would do is to improve strength, you know, ask your athletes to swim with small size paddles so you can increase strength little by little. We call bright, you know, brick by brick without overloading their shoulders or changing their stroke rate. And try to break the workout for the unskilled swimmers. Make sure they don't swim anything longer than 50. So 25 and 50 until they start perfecting their skills. And that, with the strength, is going to make them swim much better. After that, you know, talk about 2010. That'll be interesting. Still, of course, you're still going to have to work on the motor skills for those unskilled athletes. But then it'll be the time trying to polish their stroke a little bit. Right now, they don't have enough time to do that. And what they need is to be able to complete the distance and get out of the water fresh, ready for the bike and run. That's very important. You know, at this point, the speed, how fast they swim, is not relevant if that's going to make them run much slower at the end. And, you know, if you talk about an Ironman or a 70.3 race, it's a very long race. So even if you haven't improved anything on the swim, but you're much fresher off the swim, getting to the bike, you know you're going to bike stronger and run much stronger as well. So people underestimate the importance of a swim training that we actually focus a lot, because we want to make sure the athlete's not carrying that fatigue over to the biking and the run as much.
Excellent. All right. And we're going to do one more question here, and this one's from Ted in Sunnyvale. And we'll go with this one. He's got two questions. We'll go to the second one. It says, he just wants to know how to analyze on preventing nutrition problems during an Ironman, because I know you were saying that your nutritional approach is different from a lot of the stuff out there. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. One thing I realize about nutrition and athletes in general, it's athletes, they don't realize, you know, the amount of stress they get in the race. I assume she's talking about more about long distance races, right? Like half to.
Ironman. I'm assuming Ironman, because her other question was on running on Ironman.
On Ironman. So Ironman, basically what happened is that the longer the race gets, you know, the more blood you have being focused in areas that have been working. And in the case, if you're on a bike, you'd be in the legs and run. So you have a very little amount of blood in your GI and in your stomach. So you should avoid any food or anything that it's going to give you extra work for your stomach to digest. So it's one thing you have to pay attention. Second is you got to be careful with athletes out there that tend to drink concentrated maltodextrin or carbo drinks out there, and they forgot to keep the hydration concentration in of their drinks. So they over-concentrate in drinks, but they don't take enough water to kind of balance that. So you kind of end up bloating and having all that water inside your body not being absorbed, not even the calories or the water or the hydration being absorbed. So that needs to be also be taken into consideration. I see that happening many times. And one thing in particular I think is that all the gels and bars and all the stuff that's out there is so much chemical or crap that's out there that we've been eating. And if you think about, you know, the human body, we're not made to be processing all these chemicals the way we've been throwing at it. So if you try to go more into the natural food when you're doing Ironman, it's funny because I tell my athletes that, you know, back in the days when I started doing Ironman, you know, we used to eat baked potato on the bike and bananas and oranges on the run and bananas, and that was it. And I never, ever had stomach problems back then. So I only started having stomach problems when, you know, power bar gels and all that stuff came up aboard. Yeah. So it's like getting in touch with all that, and that's when all my problems started. And I believe that, you know, your body knows how to read food much better than chemicals. So if you eat a banana, your body you will digest much better than a power bar. There's no doubt. It's food compared to processed food. So if you can be try to get some of your food that you're going to have on Ironman based on food more than just gels or bars, that might help you a little bit too. And so this would be our approach, I mean, doing Ironman training. But we have a pretty different approach. We'll talk about taper for Ironman food and really pay attention to the fact of the sugar during taper. One example is one of our athletes and coach, he was a professional athlete from the Team TBB in the past. He's a diabetic, and he came from a 30 hours average a week of training to a taper. So he was in his week and a half or 2 week taper before Ironman, and he noticed that he had to inject 3 times more insulin than he usually did on his normal training weeks. And this is only by cutting down the training volume and intensity, not even considering nutrition. So that gives an idea how much more our pancreas has to do to balance all these facts. It has to do with stress, anxiety, and all that. So just for you to throw some ideas out there. If you know your body is going to be producing 3 times more insulin during that phase just by cutting the training down, and you're going to be adding more sugar, a lot of carbohydrates or carbo loading during that week, what do you think you're doing to your body? You know, your body maybe needs to produce maybe 5 times more insulin. So increasing insulin levels at that high, you know, imagine what happened with cortisol. And, you know, that's also going to affect your HGA production. So, I mean, that's affecting your recovery. So all that, you know, it's kind of a snowball effect that was purely caused by anxiety of the training and sugar. So it makes you wonder how effective a carbo loading is, especially when you talk about a race where we have to be replenishing glycogen anyway because the race is so long. So I would ask the listeners to do this test. So one day before one of your long or key workouts that you have, just try to eat a lean protein, you know, good vegetables and a good quality fat. olive oil or flaxseed oil and that, and then the other week in the same training conditions and situation, just eat the full bowl of pasta and just let me know how you feel when you wake up next day ready for a workout. And then you see the difference in recovery, see the difference in energy level, and it's all the hormone effects that caused by nutrition. So be curious to, well, we know what happens, but you guys out there should try that, and then you can start thinking twice about the theory of carb loading and all that just being out there. It's a great, because we had to work with so many, you know, athletes with the diabetes, and we learned so much, because those guys can mess up. If they mess up, they die.
Yeah.
Under nutrition, pretty much. So there's no one better than them to tell exactly how their body reacts, you know, to insensibility of, you know, glycogen. And that's exactly what we're talking about as endurance athlete. You know, how much glycogen we need and how to do it. And so we have, you know, used the expertise for the coach, Vini, and our athletes just to understand more about that. And then we just start realizing all the old theories, they're not that great the way they've been, you know, talking.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting.
Awesome. Well, Sergio, that was awesome information for everyone out there. And, again, how can people get a hold of you if they want to contact you or get your coaching?
They can look at our website, www.ironguides.net, or they can shoot me an email at sergio@ironguides.net, and I'll be more than happy to answer your questions.
And, good deal. Sergio, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
And I'll promise I'll find that research. I'm trying to look in my email that we just had that here somewhere. But please send me an email, and I'll be sending you the research that tells what you want to know about how much of the hormones and the numbers and the variation in the hormones and et cetera.
Awesome. Good stuff. If you want, you can email that to me, and I can forward it to everyone, too.
Okay, great. Yeah.